Social selling is about strategy. It's not about tools or tactics, let alone the infamous LinkedIn social selling index. Social media is one of the most important avenues for B2B marketers in the post-pandemic world. Let's hear it from an expert on what it takes to be great at social and leverage this channel effectively. In this podcast, Tim Hughes talks to us about the updated version of his book on social selling. Hello and welcome to the Visionary Marketing Podcast. Today's topic, social selling is about strategy, it's not about tools, with Tim Hughes, who will talk to us about the updated version of his book on social selling, techniques to influence buyers and change makers. So I'm here with Tim Hughes. Hi, Tim. We're going to talk about the new version of your book on social selling, which is about to be published by Kogan Page. I suggest that we jump to your chapter about how you position social selling with your executive team.
Well, Yang, thank you so much for inviting me on and talking about the book. I'm really excited about it. The first one was written back in 2016. And what we did is we felt that we needed to update it because some things had changed a bit. So that's what I've done is that I've gone through and updated all the text. I've added 30% more. And actually, I've gone out and asked 15 practitioners, so people that are doing social selling and got their advice and got them to add to the book. So that bolsters it up. So there's at least another 100 pages from the first one. To answer your question, always within social, within an organization, it should be a strategy. And I think that the trick that people often miss is the fact that they run it as a tactic. So when social media came out, people didn't know really what to do with it. So they kind of gave it to marketing. And what they do is that they leave it in a cupboard. And then they bring it out every week or every 2 weeks. Usually they post something quite often on a corporate page, and then they go and ask everybody to like it, which I would question that they're getting any response from that at all.
Well, that wasn't a long time ago. So you said
2016 wasn't long. But I thought that there had been a number of changes that had taken place, and there was a couple of people that had given feedback saying, yeah, for example, it had things like I'd written in about clout scores, and clout went out in 2018. It closed down because of the GDPR. So there were certain things in there that kind of didn't exist anymore, and I took all those things out, and I updated it. You know, things accelerated so much during COVID, and we're seeing massive changes now that there's a real take up of people. I mean, I think people quite often think that, oh yeah, social selling, it's something in the future. No. You know, I've got an interview with Chris Fleming from Cyberhawk, who's the CEO there. You know, they transformed to being a digital business 18 months ago, and you know, are now doing some amazing things where they're completely wiping out the competition. And I think that people don't recognize this, and they don't necessarily understand that. Social now is a clear competitive advantage for an organization, but it has to be run as a strategy, not as a tactic. And we just see so many people that what they do is that they put social and, you know, they treat it like a website. So it's something to do with the company. So we'll have a company page on LinkedIn and there it remains. And of course, what happens is that they're not really getting anything from it. And the key thing about the book is that what I want to do is show that there's a clear connection between social media and leads and meetings. So how are you going to get leads and meetings, something that we all want, pipeline, and therefore, how do we then use social to get revenue? And those are the things that I want to connect.
And so social selling is not just about communicating online. It's about actually pounds and pens and dollars.
Yeah. So, I mean, We have a definition for social. I mean, we've created a methodology, and within that methodology, there's a definition. And our definition is social selling is using your presence and behavior on social media to build influence, make connections, grow relationships and trust, which lead to conversations and commercial interaction. Okay. And the key thing there is that what we're doing is that we're driving commercial interaction. Organizations now at a leadership level should be able to say at board meetings, this is how much we're spending on marketing and this is how much we're getting from social media. And that when I say getting from social media, I'm not talking about likes and clicks and views. I'm talking about revenue. Right. You know, they should be able to say we can see that we're getting $6.5 million or whatever it is from the use of social media. And that's about driving a strategy from the top down to actually understand why they're actually on social. So, for example, in the interview that I do with Chris Fleming, the CEO at CyberHawk, all of the C-suite at CyberHawk are on social media. The CEO, the CMO, the CRO, the CIO, and the CFO are all on social media. Okay. And the classic example, the way that we would talk about that in terms of a story is if you think about a classic conference, an exhibition. You as a buyer, you know who you want to, you know which stands you want to go to. So you walk into the conference, you see the exhibition, and you see the supplier that you want to go and talk to. So you go over there. And what do you expect? Well, you expect someone to shake your hand, say, hey, thanks for coming on. And you say, yeah, I'm really interested in what you're doing. Oh, yeah, fine. Sit down and have a conversation. Probably at that exhibition, there would be somebody senior on there and they would talk to you. You know, we would expect that. What happens on social media now is I walk onto social media and a salesman comes up and smacks me in the face with a brochure. Nobody's interested in that. We know from research that people come to social media to be social. We're not coming onto social media to be smacked on the face with a brochure. And there's this kind of this ideology that's what you do on social media when it's not. And so what CyberHawk are doing is that they have a strategy. They know very clearly what they need to do from a social perspective, and all of the C-suite are there. And then when you look at that as an organization, you go, that's an organization that I could do business with. So, you know, another example is while it's a salesperson, Namos, which is a 100-person Oracle reseller, they had, you know, what we've done is that we've transformed their sales team. We now have buyers coming onto social media, walking up to their sales team, which is transformational. You know, normally when it's about salespeople, I don't like you, I don't trust you, and I don't want to talk to you. Here we have buyers coming on up to their salespeople saying, I think you can help me. And that's translating. So one of them have recently signed a $2.6 million deal. And then they took another $500,000 out of that recently. So here we have organizations that are doing multi-million dollar deals purely because of their position on social and treating it as a strategy. Yeah. And seeing that everybody within the organization should be involved.
So here it's a real serious business, and as you said, number one point in your methodology is to start with a strategy and get the C-suite involved. Number two, as you said in your book on page 183, is as part of that strategy, you have to create a mission statement. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So one of the things that we do is that we work with organizations to help them build that strategy. And we do a classic brainstorming session where we get the C-suite and probably one of their advisors into a room. And then we work through with them about the importance of strategy, about using the data to show how the world has changed. People quite often recognize that there's sort of change, but they kind of don't understand that now, you know, 60% of the world's population are active on social media. And when I mean active, active means they're on social media for 2.5 hours a day. And this is the data that comes from Simon Kemp. So if your people are listening to this, if you go to Simon Kemp on LinkedIn, he has all that data and it breaks down to each particular country. So a classic mission statement that has been created. So Telstra Purple came up with a mission statement which says, a social organization sees social as a platform for closing the distance between clients, prospects, remote employees, mm-hmm. and potential recruits. That gives you some idea about what the mission statement, because they see social as not just an ability for that organization to sell more, which is really, really good, but they actually see social as an ability to mm-hmm. to do a number of things. One is to get traditional visibility that you would expect from marketing. They're a cybersecurity company, so they're very keen to be trusted get trusted advisor status, get people to say, that company looks like they know what they're talking about. Can you come in and actually help us? We all say that we get into sales far too late. This is a way of actually shortcutting that and getting in early and actually controlling the opportunity. They want to be able to recruit and retain the best talent. So how can they become the employer of choice? Regardless of whether we're in a market where there's no talent or we've got lots of talent or whatever, what we want is the best talent. And of course, what COVID has proved is that you don't need to recruit people from within 30 miles of your office. What you're able to do is actually get the best talent wherever it is. To have employee engagement and a shared sense of purpose. So using social internally to actually get that, you know, working with the employees so they actually feel that they're part of the business. And of course, the pipeline growth and customers.
Just a question as a sort of sideline. We keep talking about social and social selling, but what kind of tools are we talking about here? Is it just about LinkedIn, or is there a number of tools that people can use to do social selling?
We as a business actually use very few tools, because actually this is about you and about being human centric. I mean, we use Slack internally. I've used internal social now for a number of years. When I was in corporate, I used an internal social media system there. It was written by their own, by that particular company. Yeah. And we increased the efficiency of the employees by 25%. So that's a bit like getting 25% more employees at no cost. So it was a kind of it used to save so much time. It didn't stop meetings, but it used to cut the time down of meetings. And again, it works only when you have senior leadership basically using it, and senior, you know, so for our sales VP said, if you want to get hold of me, I'm on social. If you send me an email, and it's the same internally here at DLA Ignite. If people send me an email, I say, I only look at my email at certain two points a day, at the beginning and at the end of the day. So if you want to get hold of me, you get me on Slack. And that's where we've actually...
Yeah, that's a very important Slack point. At the end of the day, what matters is the conversations and collaboration, and the tool comes next.
Okay, fine.
We use Slack, we use LinkedIn, we use a number of social platforms purely because today we live in two worlds. We live in a physical world and we live in a digital world. As soon as we go online onto social media, we're in digital. And what we need to be able to do as salespeople, in fact, leaders of organizations, is to be able to walk digital corridors and have digital conversations. And that's like 20, 25 years ago, we need to understand how to use PowerPoint and spreadsheets. Being able to walk digital corridors and have digital conversations is now paramount and is now something that we all have to be able to do.
So tools are important as well, and but they come actually second. Third point, you're actually advising companies to get an external third party in to train the team. Does that mean yourself?
Of course, I'm biased. I mean, we're an independent third party. What we see, though, is that we see a lot of organizations that that they'll sit in a meeting and say, we need to get digital. And then they'll look around the room and say, well, who are we going to do that? So at my last company, there was somebody that they couldn't fire. So they got them to do it as a special project. Mm. And of course, nothing happened. Or what they do is that they get somebody in and say, oh, well, that person's a digital native, we'll get them in. When actually, if you look at their profiles, they're not actually exhibiting any digital qualities or behaviors. And quite often that's one of the worst things you can do, because it takes you 18 months to work out that actually you're no further forward, because that person hasn't necessarily got the business acumen. You know, being digital and training and coaching, and I'm using the word coaching on purpose, because what you're doing is that you're giving people a new skill, and people react to having a new skill quite often is, I don't want it. And so you're in a situation where what I saw certainly when I was in corporate was that to train the salespeople, you need to have people who the sales team respect. People who have carried a bag, who have been in sales and said, this is how I use it, or this is what I do. So one of the things that we did, for example, we had a salesperson whose dog had 2,000 followers on Twitter. And we used to go to that person and say, we're thinking of doing this, can you try it out? And then when they got it to work, everyone said, well, how did you do that, Andy? Well, I just did this. So the key thing is to make sure that the if you're going to start in sales as the point of actually transforming your organization to digital, then what you need are people that actually have seen it and done it and got the T-shirt, who the sales team actually respect. Now, I've actually had someone come to me and said, I don't believe you're too old to know anything about social media, which kind of makes me smile, the fact that I've now written 3 books about it. And I've got loads and loads of organizations, you know, that have come that we've transformed. But the fact of the matter is that what we say is that you need a grown up in the room. You're going to be going into an organization where you're going to be giving people and showing them new skills, and that usually is a difficult thing. It is, if you teach them cold calling or whatever, you're always going to get resistance. And what you need are adults who are going to have a conversation that can actually say, this is what you need to do. And if you do this and you do this and you do this.
So I hear it from what you say that age doesn't matter. And this is good news for me. I can be in social selling then.
We've not found age impact at all ever on understanding social. Oh.
That's very good news. You mentioned something about training the team, and I think that's number 6, actually, as part of your methodology, and coaching them as well. So what sort of difference do you make between training and coaching?
So most research says that the amount that you can actually learn sitting in the classroom is minimal. So we use a methodology called 70-20-10, which is a classic change management methodology. So we have classroom sessions, and within those classroom sessions, there is always a transferring information and saying, this is what you need to do. But what they do is that they then take that and they use that in their working world. So they're able to actually see whether there's a whether it works. It may work for them. It might not. They then come back, and the week later, we then have a one-to-one. It's confidential. It is one-to-one. It's just between a coach and that individual. And so what they're able to do is take what they see in the classroom, of which there's a whole bunch of various things to do and exercises to do. They then also then take that out, and then they come back into the coaching session. And that coaching session is about making sure that we're bringing everybody along on the journey, because there'll be some people that are frightened. Some people actually don't have any skills. Some people actually are amazing, and all you have to do is empower them and off they go. So it's about making sure that we provide a level of support to everyone, regardless of their ability.
Okay, good. Maybe the final point now, which is number 4 in your methodology, you have to work right across the business on the corporate mindset. Well, that's an interesting one. So mindset, what has it got to do with
social selling?
Well, we often find that in, this isn't just about social selling. You can just implement social selling, but this is about transforming your organization to digital. Mm-hmm. So currently we have these two worlds. We have the physical world that we all know and love, and we have the digital world. And to get to the digital world, social media is a conduit to that digital world. So your LinkedIn profile is you, it's your digital twin in digital. Mm-hmm. So the way that your LinkedIn profile looks is how you want the digital world to see you. So the way that you're not doing any video on here, but if you were doing video, then when I turn up and I talk, I'm here with the way that I want people to see me and recognize me. You would expect then you would do that within your digital twin. And so what we're doing is that we're making sure that people understand that and understand that across the business. Mm-hmm. So for example, at Display Technology in Cambridge, their HR team are not using any recruitment consultants or recruitment advertising anymore. Why not? Mm-hmm. Well, because they're digital. You don't need mm-hmm. in digital, you don't need to, because they've empowered their people to talk online. To talk about, hey, this is a great place to work for because we've got this great diversity program, which great our ESG program is really wonderful. And it really empowers me. So what they're doing is that they're getting people to talk. And of course, what happens is that we know that everybody is on social, 60% of the world's population. And what people are doing is saying, that looks like a place I want to work for. And so what mm-hmm. happens is that they're getting people coming to them saying, that looks like a really exciting place to work for. Can I come and work for you? Which is why that then they don't have a problem with recruitment. So the whole point is, in the world of digital, it gives us new efficiencies and new ways of working. It's not about tools. It's not about a new ERP system or anything mm-hmm. like that. It's about using digital as the way that we work. And that empowerment across the organization means that we can work in different ways. We can strip out cost and we can be more efficient. HR is just an example of that. And what we would recommend is that certainly having open minds. It was Frank Zappa that said that. Was it Frank Zappa that said the mind is like a parachute, best used when it's open. And by having a mindset and an open mindset across the organization, understanding these things and not necessarily sitting there with their arms folded saying, well, I'm happy, I've done it like this for the last 20 years and it's been okay for me. What we're doing is that we're hoping people are going to have open mindset mm-hmm. and then actually understand that there is a new way of doing things and a new digital way of doing things.
Crystal clear. As you said, things have changed considerably since 2016, but now, okay, maybe my final question. Are you impressed with the way that businesses are handling these things and this new digital world and these new digital twins? Are they really up to scratch, or is there lots of work on their plates?
Well, when Adam Gray and I started our company 6 years ago, we thought we had 18 months, at which point everybody would get it and it would become the norm. Here we are in our seventh year, and 99.9999999% of companies do not understand it.
Yes.
You've got a lot of companies. I've written a number of times about big, big companies that have got big, big marketing budgets that don't understand digital. But I can guarantee you they're going to their board and saying, we're killing it on social.
Yeah.
And so there's this mismatch between actually, certainly from a leadership position, to understand what does social and digital mean and what does it mean to the business, and to break away from this, it's about likes and clicks and things like that. I wrote recently about an organization. They've got 300,000 employees. They've got 8 million followers on LinkedIn. They get 15 likes per post. Of those 15, 7 of them are internal, which means they're not influencing the people they're trying to influence, which is your prospects and customers. The marketing agency that writes the copy, because I can see that, because you can see that it's a marketing agency, and then some random people. Now, I can guarantee you that organization is going to their leadership and saying, we're killing it on social. Now, everybody in my company gets more engagement than IBM.
Sure.
Now, that's not because we're cleverer than IBM, because IBM have, I mean, we don't have any MBAs in our company. We don't have any PhDs. IBM will have thousands. But it's about understanding the world of digital and the way that it works, and having not just understanding social, but having the business acumen about how to apply it. And IBM don't get it. Mm-hmm. And IBM are missing out on millions, if not billions of dollars, because other people, small, nimble competitors are starting to get it. And what we're seeing, it's probably the more smaller companies that are recognizing and actually being brave to actually say, this is the fourth industrial revolution. Mm. Things have changed because of COVID, and that accelerated that. What we need to do is we need to do things differently. So we've got organizations that are coming to us that are completely redesigning their brand to cash, or whatever the process is that you think about, you know, before it actually gets to a lead or whatever. They're actually completely redesigning that process, because the process that they've got is 30 years old. You know, it was built before faxes and Sony Walkmans BlackBerrys, but they're still using the process that they built back in the 1980s. And so what they're doing is that they're rebuilding it. And they're seeing and recognizing that change. And as I say, this is not some future. This is already happening, and it's been happening now for the last 6 years.
On the one hand, it's very encouraging for people like you and I, because means there's a lot of work for us to do, and we've still got a long way to go with this 99.999999%. Having said that, isn't that a bit depressing, though? That we keep repeating the same things over and over again. And there's nothing, there's no rocket science in there. You know, start with a strategy. Seems like one of my lectures from 30 years ago. So why is it that people still focus on strategy, on tactics rather than strategy, and fail lamentably? Why is it that businesses like IBM and the rest of it have thousands of PhDs and very clever people and the rubber never meets the road? Why is it that all the boxes have been ticked and then the job is not done? Why?
I don't know. It's so simple. You need to ask them. You know, the thing is that the data is out there. You know, the information is out there. You know, my book's been out there since 2016. You know, and I think that there's probably two things. In Peter Singer's book, The Fifth Discipline, Peter Senge's book, The Fifth Discipline, he talks about mental models and the fact that people have a mental model about the way business should be. And he talks about the automobile industry. You know, this is going back probably 20 years. When they first got a realization that something was going on in Japan and the way that the Japanese were building cars. And they had this view that this is the way that you did things. And the Americans went over to Japan to actually look at how the Japanese were building cars. And one of the first people that was interviewed said, they're showing us demo sites. These are not the real factories. And they said, well, why are these not the real factories? And he's got the quote in. They said, I've been working in automotive now for 30 years. And, you know, when you work in automotive, there are piles of components and parts piled up. That's the way it works. And the thing was that they'd completely missed that the fact that the Japanese were using just in time. And their mental model was, this is the way that it works. This is the way it's worked for 20 or 30 years. And when someone had actually come along with a way of actually doing something and doing it differently, it's like, no, it doesn't work. You know, I still get people saying to me, social selling doesn't work. And it's like, really? Do you not understand this case study, you know, we've got case studies coming out our ears. And you don't understand it. You don't understand what $2.6 million of new business is that you missed out on.
Yeah.
That you're, you know, it's like, and it's because of this mental model where they think, and what we see with marketers is that they seem to have this toolbox that they reach into, and it's like, well, what are you going to get? Well, we'll do some advertising, but you don't look, you don't even look at it yourself. You know, I interviewed someone and they said, I said, what are you doing? And they said, using advertising. I said, do you use ad blockers? They said, oh yeah, we all do across the marketing team. We hate ads. I said, have you not just replay to me again what you've just said?
Yeah. Well, that is self-explanatory. I mean, as Andy Cernovitz used to say, advertising is the cost of being boring.
It is.
And it's also very easy. And when you're a marketing director and your life expectancy is about 2.5 years at the most, usually you don't get into very complex processes whereby, you know, you're going to have to build a network or build a community or start nurturing it or even talking with people, which is very hard. So you'd rather talk at people.
One of the things, Jan, that we often get is that social selling takes a long time, and this is utter rubbish. You know, we have marketers that, you know, for example, if I go onto, you know, I can go onto social media, I can connect with somebody, have a conversation with them. So notice I didn't say spam them. I have a conversation with that person and I can get a meeting with them very, very quickly. You know, I got a meet, you know, I was on a call with a CEO the other day and he said to me, he said, I don't believe this stuff works. I said, how do you think I got on this call today? And he went, oh, yes. And the thing is that we now understand social that it's not about it's the speed of this, you know, LinkedIn allows you to have 200 connections a week. That's 200 conversations, 200 conversations with the people that you're trying to influence. Yeah. That can accelerate your activity online. And we see social selling actually shortening the sales cycle because you're not having to deal with a whole load of stuff up front. People will see you as who you are and will have a conversation with you online quickly, just like that.
To be very honest with you, I don't know any other method. So this is music to my ears. But so now how long is it going to take for these 99.99999% to understand something?
I don't know. We saw a real tipping point last October. October 2020, when we in the UK, when people went into the second lockdown, when they realized it wasn't just a fad and it wasn't, you know, this was serious. Mm-hmm. And then what we had to do was actually relearn the way that we worked. And then the expectation was actually, I don't need to fly anywhere. I don't need to go into London or whatever the commute into whatever. I can sit here in my office at home and I can run a normal day's work. And I think it's that realization. But I think there's still so many mental models out there that 30 years ago is the way that we do things. And gradually what will happen is that over time, as those people either wake up, lift their heads up and actually recognize or the leadership team start asking questions and saying, so what are we getting from this? And why aren't we doing this? And I read about this, which is sometimes some of the things that you need. It's about, you know, really having challenging questions and people saying, okay, I need to go away and think about that.
Okay. Maybe a final question.
Okay.
About LinkedIn itself. As you know, there's a lot of people out there who've been using LinkedIn like me for about 20 years who are complaining that it looks more and more like Facebook.
Okay.
What's your take on that? And do you think that it will have an impact on social selling eventually?
Yeah, it's interesting. If anyone ever says that to us, what we always say to them is, okay, so what's how How do you get close to your clients? They say, well, I take them out for a meal or we go to the sports. Mm. Or something. Okay, mm. Right, okay. And what do? You talk about work? No, I don't talk about work there. We talk about, you know, families, because it's about getting close to people. Okay, and why do you want to get close to a person? Well, if I know them and I get to know them better, then what happens is that they're more likely to buy from me. Right, okay. So you don't talk about work, but you want to get close to people. And this is what being social is about. Mm-hmm. So we don't talk about business posts and personal posts. This is life posts. This is about you understanding me, who I am. You know, you get to know me. You get to know me and understand that I know about social selling. But you also get to know me, and you know me, the fact that I have, my father has dementia and is in a home. And what that does is it pulls people towards you, because they get to know the real Tim Hughes, the Tim Hughes that that you would deal with if I became the person that was delivering a service to you. Mm. And so what you'll find is that LinkedIn will become more like Facebook, because more and more people will actually recognize the fact that by doing this, what you're doing is that you're actually getting people to understand you. So we actually use a slide in we have a presentation that we give to people, which is an overview of social media. It's our view of the art of the possible with case studies and stuff. And we use a particular post of one of the people that works for me, which is Eric Doyle. And he, during lockdown, took, it was his son's 16th birthday, and he took some pictures of him and his son on the beach. His son wanted to be out with his mates getting drunk, but he had to be with his boring dad on the beach. Off the back of that, Eric got 184 leads. He got 6 C-level meetings. He got 2 proposals and 1 purchase order. And it took him 10 minutes to do. Now, there's not one single demand gen activity that you can do for free that can get you that level of response. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'm not saying is that you put pictures of yourself at the beach every single day, because the conclusion we'll jump to is that all you do is spend your time at the beach. What you should do is, when you come to my LinkedIn profile, you should be able to understand what it is that I stand for. You know, your LinkedIn profile is your shop window to the world. It's about how, when your ideal customer spots that as they go through their timeline, as they spot, they go, that looks interesting. Hmm. I'm curious about that. And they walk towards you, rather than the boring, which is what happens most of the time. And what you do is that your LinkedIn profile should say, explain who you are. And that who you are is not just about the fact that you go to work, but the fact that, you know, I'm going to spend the next weekend taking my mum to see my dad. That's me. That's part of me. And that's part of who I am. And people respect that. And I get people coming to me. So that punches out my network. So it punches into the people that I'm trying to influence. And I will get people who I'm trying to influence, as in I'm trying to sell to, coming to say, I love that picture of you and your dad. You know, you look alike, or whatever the thing is. And this is about them understanding who Tim Hughes is in the round. Sorry, long answer to your question.
No, that's a long answer, but that's an interesting one, because it rings a bell, actually. Going back to my previous question about the 99.99999% and why they fail, isn't that because they fail to be personable, because they're just a nondescript, grey corporate?
It's absolutely. So what people think social is about is they think that what I should do is I need to take a brochure and I need to put that online. Because I'm told to do that, or my ideal customer, nobody wants a brochure. We don't read brochures anymore. Or it will be a white paper. Not interested. You know, what I'm looking for is, you know, people by people. I'm looking for a relationship with somebody, someone that can help me solve my business issues, somebody that I can trust, somebody that I know that if the project starts failing and I ring them up, they're going to take that call, even if it's a Saturday, that I can look upon them, that they're an organization that I want to do business with. And that's about seeing that person in the round. Now, when we've done business in the physical world, we don't walk into a meeting and immediately give people brochures. Well, I've done. I sit there and say, I've been working in this, you know, I've been working here for 20 years. you know, I've been selling accounting systems for 20 years. I've been working across industries. I generally know about certain things about accounting, but there's bound to be something that I've missed. But it's about bringing that expertise and also bringing your personality, people by people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is social media. This is not spam media. This is not posting brochure media or whatever. It's social media. And the sooner people wake up and understand that this is about being social and it's about empowering the people, that's when things actually start happening and the magic takes place.
Social media, not spam media. That's going to be a great headline. Thank you very much.
This piece has been useful to you. Don't forget to give us a good rating on whichever platform you use. And we hope to see you soon on the Visionary Marketing Podcast channel.